in the world of sports. She's got next. Next. Here's Jordan Robinson.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of She's Got Next. I'm Jordan Robinson, your host, and I am so excited for today's show. We're covering all things women's sports here, the latest headlines, the most up-to-date news, and we have a wonderful interview for you later on. It's all here, so don't go anywhere. But in case you missed last week's interview, I talked to the Athletes Unlimited Softball League Commissioner, Kim Ng, about the launch of the AUSL and the immediate success and the overwhelming kudos she's received already in the opening weeks of the league. The kickoff, it's been strong in its inaugural season, okay? Multiple sold-out games and 13.2 million video views on its social media channels. I know that's how I've been digesting and taking all this in and liking and sharing. It's been so cool to see its growth already. Also, one of the stars from the Women's College World Series and national champion with Texas, we talked about her, Mia Scott. She's a pro now. Just that quick. She's already with Athletes Unlimited. She signed a contract to play for the Vaults, despite reports that her ACL injury would keep her out. Wow. She is tough as nails. Couldn't be me. But Commissioner Ng talked with me about her early days loving softball, how her being the first female GM in MLB history has prepared her for this moment. It was such a great conversation. So make sure to check out that interview and that episode wherever you get your podcasts. But on today's episode, we are diving into the world of women's professional golf, a sport that I am growing to love. Actually, over, you know, this past week, me and my husband, we like went to the driving range. Later, you'll hear from U.S. Women's Open champion Maya Stark, one of my favorite conversations, because I feel like I learned so much. We talk about her reaction to winning one of the biggest championships on the LPGA Tour, what she's going to do with all that money that she won, the behind the scenes of pro golf and individual pro sports that many of us just have no idea about. That was really fascinating. And she talks about her very special relationship with her caddy. So that's all coming up. But I wanted to give a little more backstory on women's golf. Let's go back all the way to the beginning, because I'm such a nerd for things like this. I am writing a book on the history of women's basketball going back to the 1800s. I just love being a history nerd, and especially when it involves sports. So you're going on this ride with me, okay? 1867 in Scotland, the birthplace of golf. A group of women who were pioneers in the sport came together to form the Ladies Club of St. Andrews, marking the first women's golf club in history. The women who formed this club were largely from the area, locals. Many of them were wives and daughters of the men who were members of the prestigious Royal and Ancient Golf Club of St. Andrews. Then fast forward to the Ladies Golf Union, which was formed in the UK in 1893. That was responsible for organizing the first women's amateur championship that same year. How cool is that? Then changing it over to the US, the American Ladies Golf Association was formed in 1897. But the first amateur American championship was in 1895. These were building blocks to the Ladies Professional Golf Association, the LPGA, that we know and love, which was established in 1950. So two of the biggest and historic tournaments for women go back to the late 40s and early 50s, the U.S. Women's Open and the Women's PGA Championship, also known as the KPMG Women's PGA Championship due to sponsorship. Both of these tournaments happened this month in June. The U.S. Women's Open was at Erin Hills Golf Course in Wisconsin earlier this month. one of the toughest courses golfers will face all season. The winner was Maya Stark, who we're going to hear from later. In those early days of the tournament in the 1940s and 50s, the total purse was around $7,500, with the champion taking home a dismal $1,500. Now, the purse hit a record $12 million, with the first place finisher pocketing $2.4 million. For the men's U.S. Open, which just finished recently, the total purse was $21.5 million, with the winner, JJ Spahn, taking home $4.3 million. So still a little ways to go for pure equality, you know, something that I really admire about the professional tennis world, where the purses are the same for men and women. But you know that history. Billie Jean King, Venus Williams fought for decades to get that. So we're close. That is still some progress to be excited about. And we are getting closer to closing the gap, but still exciting. 12 milli? That's good. I'll take it. And it's amazing to see just how women's golf has grown over the years, especially internationally, but also American talent rising to the top. So we're all golf girlies now. I hope you're in this with me, especially when you hear from Maya a little bit later. But before we hear from her, let's get into the Women's Sports Week recap. The 2025 NCAA Track and Field Championships in Eugene, Oregon this past week were incredible. If you missed any of those highlights, go look them up right now. Unless you're driving, don't do that. But when you stop and pull over, look up those highlights because they are so fun. Michigan's Savannah Sutherland made the 400-meter hurdles look easy peasy as she set a new NCAA record, clocking a time of 52.46. This tops Sydney McLaughlin-Lerone's previous record while at Kentucky, which was 52.76. She set that in 2018. And we know what Sydney can do, especially at an Olympic level. So that's good, Savannah, to be in any conversation with Sydney McLaughlin-Lerone. Also from those championships, sophomore Doris Lemingol from Alabama posted the first ever sub-9 steeplechase in NCAA history. And the Georgia Bulldogs were crowned as national champs. What a great turnout. Great tournament, or great championships there. The WNBA's Commissioner's Cup, the in-season tournament with $500,000 on the line, concluded this week, and it was a very spicy conclusion. Almost all the teams played on the final day, but the final two teams are set, with Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever representing the East, and Nafisa Collier's Minnesota Lynx coming out of the West. The championship will be July 1st on Amazon Prime. Get your popcorn ready, because it's going... Yeah, it's a lot to unpack there, but the Commissioner's Cup Championship is going to be awesome. Make sure to tune in. And finally, in huge news for women's athletics, the Women's Tennis Association, the WTA, announced a new fertility policy that will allow players to protect their WTA ranking if they're taking time off for an egg or embryo freezing procedure. The new rule aims to support women athletes with balancing their family goals and career ambitions and comes 3 months after the WTA offered players up to 12 months of paid maternity leave for the first time, according to ESPN. This is groundbreaking for women's sports. Such huge news. And just like we said, talking about tennis with the equal purses, tennis is constantly setting the precedent for women's athletes, and especially in individual sports. Sloane Stephens, the 2017 U.S. Open champion, she specifically has previously called to attention, really, this topic and how women athletes shouldn't be penalized if they wanted to make the decision to freeze their eggs or embryos for use at a later date. A more ideal time for them to grow their family, whenever that may be. In reaction to this news, she said she's proud of her sport and how it's recognized the importance of this topic for women athletes. Kudos. I am giving you a round of applause, WTA, because that is really huge. And I hope that other leagues, other entities can take notice and start this, especially that 12 months paid maternity leave. That is incredible. All right. I hope you feel caught up on this past week. I hope you feel like you have a little primer for women's golf. Coming up next, we'll hear from Maya Stark, women's professional golfer. You're listening to She's Got Next with Jordan Robinson.
From Odyssey Sports, it's She's Got Next with Jordan Robinson.
Today's special guest is Maya Stark, professional women's golfer on the LPGA Tour, and She's Got Next. Welcome to the show, Maya.
Thank you.
Congratulations on winning the U.S. Women's Open at Erin Hills. Has it, I know you said you're coming down from it, but has it finally started to settle in that you got that huge win?
Not at all. I've been just thinking that, you know, if someone asked me like who won the US Women's Open this year, I'd be like, I did. Like I don't even think about it. It's crazy. It's like the weirdest feeling.
Oh my God. I can't imagine, but I would be telling everyone. I think I would be the opposite. I would be like at the grocery store while I'm pumping gas. I'm like, yeah, you see this trophy? That's all me. That's but I want to talk about kind of going into it, because leading up to it, your best finish was ninth place in 2023. This time around, you had even par 72 in your final round, enough for a two-stroke victory. What was your mindset coming into this major?
I always love US Opens. I love the test. And I think it just brings me that little extra energy to do the work. And I think going into it, like the week before, my confidence levels have been kind of low this whole year, because I felt like I have been getting better at golf, but I'm not seeing it in the results. So I was just like thinking, I'm learning more and more about my swing. I feel like I'm swinging it better, but it's nothing's really happening. I can't get it to all click at the same time. So then, the week before I left, I was really, you know, just struggling. And I was talking to someone about it, and they were like, you can't win it if you're not confident, if you don't think you can win it. So just know that winning is an option and just trust it. And then, yeah, I felt like got to the championship and I really liked the course, even though it was crazy difficult, you know. I enjoy the grind, and it was very similar grass to what I was used to growing up. So, yeah.
I love that. I love winning is an option. That is a really good pep talk to whoever gave you that. That's so good, because it's kind of less about the physical. I was going to ask like what that, you know, what specifically on your golf game were you kind of working on coming in? But it seems like it was more mental gymnastics and workouts that you were trying to put yourself through.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think even during the tournament, you know, we have so many great players and great golf swings, but it just felt like me and my caddy, Jeff, we never put ourselves in any bad spots. And that just made it so that we didn't make it double. We would make bogeys, and that was the worst we could do. And if you keep your worst score to a bogey at a US Open, you'll probably go pretty far. Mm-hmm. So it just felt like we had the perfect strategy. And when we, like on some holes, we didn't even aim for the green in our approach shot. We would aim off the green, because either mm-hmm. would take a bounce or it would be a way better leave than going for the pin. So it just felt like we had the discipline and the strategy that whole week.
It's like the game within the game.
Exactly. chess, not checkers.
Oh my gosh. Also, I'm so curious, because in a competition like this, when there is, you know, such great competition and great players, how often are you looking at the leaderboard?
I usually am a leaderboard watcher.
Okay.
Just because it's kind of stupid because it doesn't make me play any better. It makes me start forcing stuff. So I don't know why I do it. The two times that I've won LPGA tournaments, I haven't looked at the leaderboard during the last round, and obviously it's been working out for me. So maybe I should just stop. Because
I was going to say, it doesn't provide motivation. Does it provide? No, it does. Okay.
I think it just gives me a feeling of control, I guess, to know where I'm at. But, you know, I don't want to try to control stuff, because that's, first of all, you can't play sports while trying to control everything. And I think that, looking at the evidence, that 2 out of 2 times when I don't look at it, it turns out great. So
maybe we'll keep doing that. Maybe we'll follow that path. I love that. And okay, so you go through it, you grind through it, and at the last hole, a champagne shower is waiting for you with your friends. It still hasn't settled in many days later, so I know it didn't hit you at that moment. But what was that moment like to even just celebrate with the people around you and hear that applause for you?
That was probably the nicest feeling, because you were like, oh, I'm done. Like, I can't mess up from now on, because the whole week you're kind of just walking around thinking, oh man, I have the lead, I don't want to mess up. And that's kind of what I had on the first day when I shot like 5 under my first 10 holes. And then I was like, oh, it's happening. And then, I started messing up because I was like, oh man, don't mess up. I played with on the LET with Lynn Grant, who was there, who popped the champagne, and she's been there for my past couple wins. And I've never heard her shout that loud. We will root for each other, but we'll also try to beat each other at every single tournament. And just to have her there was huge. And then obviously Ingrid as well, so, who I've known for ages, haven't really had the same, that we play against each other all the time, because she's a rookie on the LPGA and has already won. I mean, that's crazy. But it was really nice to have them there and for them to stay, because we've known each other for so long and, played on the national team together and stuff. It was really special.
What is that kind of sisterhood like? Because it is a very individual sport, and this is something that, you are all trying to compete with each other, but you see each other a lot on different majors throughout the tour. So how would you describe to someone on an outside what that sisterhood is like?
I think that golf is one of the best sports for it, because if you are not happy for other people when they win, and if you kind of just do your own thing and hang out by yourself, it's going to feel really lonely, and winning is not as fun if you do everything yourself. So I think that while we're trying to beat each other, as soon as you're done playing and you're like, oh, I lost to my friend, then it's just celebrate, while also having there is a little jealousy there, and you're like, damn, why didn't I get this one? But I think that just like fires that even more. So I think it's like the perfect mix that, and we've been doing that for ages. When I was on the national team, we were 6 players, and I was the worst one on the team. Everyone else had won like big European amateur competitions, and I was the only one who didn't win that year, the year 2016-2017. And I just thought, what is wrong with me? Why is it happening to everyone else around me? But that just fueled me to try even harder. So I think that was the best thing that could have happened to me.
I love that perspective and that perfect mix, because you want to root for your girls, and you're there with the champagne, and I know you would be there with the champagne if someone else had won, right? But then at the same time, you're like, okay, let's get back to the lab. Let's make sure, what did she do well that now I can take from? So that's super important and exciting for that world of golf. And then this win with the US Open, I mean, it comes with its perks. And that is a very nice, shiny check of over $2 million. So I heard that maybe you're moving out of your studio apartment. Is that first on the list from getting this?
Yes, but that would be like the only thing I would actually want, I think, especially now that, you know, they sent so much merch and I have the trophy case, and the trophy case is like 70 pounds and I have nowhere to put it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's crazy. And, I think so, that I'm going to be moving out, but you know, my lease isn't up until January next year. So I'm going to try to not be stupid with it. I'm going to wait and just see after. I don't know if I'm still on a high or if this is just like my normal state from now on, where I'm just so relaxed and like, whatever. I can go do this. I can go do that. I'm going to wait a little bit and see when the brain chemicals even out, you know, see what I want to do then.
That is so smart. So you're not just making rash decisions with all this newfound money. That is so funny. Also, let's go back to the trophy case real quick. 70 pounds, did they send that back on the plane with you? Like, did you have to, like, how did it get to you now?
Oh, no, they shipped it.
Okay.
Because, yeah, and they, well, I think they asked me if I wanted to take it with me, and I'm like, absolutely not. Don't trust me with that. I mean, they have an air tag in the case and everything.
Still, I would be like, no. Don't trust me with that. I'm with you.
Oh, man. I barely trust myself with anything. Not because I'm prone to losing things. I'm just a worrier like crazy. So, yeah, I'm in my studio apartment. I have one bookshelf and I put the trophy and the medal that I got up on the shelf, and it looks ridiculous because the trophy is huge and I have nothing else. Like, I never put my trophies up anywhere. Like, I don't really know where they are. I think I gave a lot of them to my golf course back home to put in the trophy case, but I usually don't do anything with them because I'm like, okay, I've moved on. Like, I'm on to the next tournament when I've won anything. So it's just so weird. I catch myself looking at it sometimes. I'm like, wow, that's huge. Just
as you
the
should.
Size of that.
As you you're like, yeah, I'm keeping this one. I wanna yeah. Look at this one just a little bit longer. That is, so I can picture that. Thank you for painting that vision for us all, because we can picture just this one bookshelf with this huge trophy on it, and there's like nothing else around it, as it should be. That is hilarious. But I also want to ask, because this is something in pro golf that I think a lot of people don't really understand. When we talk about pay and how you have to kind of pay your own way during the tour, like, can you explain how that process works? Because it's different than maybe other sports.
Yeah, so I think the hardest part when you're a golf professional is probably the first year or so, unless you've got really good sponsors from the beginning. Like, if you're a top ranked amateur, I went into pro life with, I got a stipend that was $7,500, and I didn't have any sponsors or anything. And I just thought, okay, I need to play well, because when this money runs out, I don't know what I'm going to do. And then thankfully I had a good start to my career. Yeah. But it's so different, like, compared to soccer or basketball or anything, because you're on your own and, you know, the expenses, you can make it really cheap if you try, and you can stay with host families and, you know, drive between tournaments, but then you kind of want to invest in yourself. And I have a pretty cheap team around me. You know, I use my national team coaches I'm really grateful for them, but they're paid for by the national team. And they are super helpful to me. And then, you know, I invested and got an instructor, and, you know, that's an extra expense, and you have to pay your caddy. You have to pay, you know, a bonus that the caddy gets based on how much you win. So they take a percentage of that. Some coaches take a percentage, some physios take a percentage. you know, you easily rack up over $10,000 of expenses every month. And I feel like, yeah, that's what maybe people don't really realize. They just see the big checks, but then they don't see our expenses and just how crazy it is out here, and how if I get injured tomorrow, the money needs to last for longer. So they just see like, oh, she won this much money. Maybe she should spend it. Or people have been telling me to spend it. I'm like, I don't dare to, because I could get injured tomorrow. You know, everyone has little aches and pains that could get bigger, and then you could end up just not playing well for a while. You know, that happens to golfers all the time. So yeah, you have to create your own stability, because you're not going to get it from somewhere else, you know. And then obviously sponsors are great, but they do have like, you have a minimum amount of tournaments that you will need to play to get it. So yeah, this is very special.
Wow. Okay. I had no idea. That is a lot of, like, you're an accountant as well as a professional golfer, like having to figure all that out. And I just see the meme with all the like numbers and everything swirling around, because that's what you're having to juggle. But then at the same time, you're like, okay, I really need to win, especially that first year when you're a pro. You're like, all right, the stipend is running out. I have to win a purse so that this can carry me on. And that's like another layer of pressure, maybe, of motivation. What, like, that's a whole nother layer into it.
Yeah. And I mean, we were doing this interview, I was sitting dividing my receipts for the year. You know, that's the fun stuff that we got to do. But yeah, I was just so lucky that my tour career or my pro career started, but I experienced feelings that I never had before. You know, before I turned pro, I used to be maybe not super feisty or anything. I was more disappointed and like sad than angry at myself. But then as soon as I played my first pro tournament, I started like beating myself up so much over missed shots and mistakes, because I was like, this putt that I missed was worth this much money. And that is an awful feeling. Especially I've had like journalists say, oh, you missed this putt, that was worth this much money. How do you feel about that? I'm like, okay, I feel terrible, but I can't do anything about it now. Thanks for bringing it up.
I won't ask that, I promise. Oh my gosh, Maya. Wow. Oh, wow. Well, thank you for that little glimpse into your world. And now I know that I have a little connection to a pro golfer as a freelancer, because we're both scanning our receipts and making sure we're tracking all of our expenses.
Working miles out here.
Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. Okay. I also want to talk about, you mentioned your national team coaches, and when you won the U.S. Open, you were the third Swedish player to win the event, the first since 2006, which is a really big deal. So how did it feel to represent your country, your home country, in that way?
It's so much fun, you know, seeing Sweden, and we have 10 million people, but we keep producing good athletes. It's crazy to me, and it feels so nice to be, you know, recognized as one of them now, especially when I have like the receipt of I won a US Open. So I did something for, you know, Swedish sports. But I think the best part is I love the Swedish national team, and I like the federation. I like all the people that work there. I think they are fantastic human beings. You know, they do it for the love of the game. And, you know, obviously the perks are like people look up to them a lot, but they don't get like crazy salaries. They don't, that's not what they do it for. They do it because they love to help young players, and they put everything that the national team gets, like they put it right back into the players and the golf clubs. And I really like that. And I didn't know this, but the former national team captain, Katarina, she said that every time a Swedish player wins on tour, they have cake at the office of the federation. And I thought that was so adorable. Cute. Yeah, they celebrated so much. I had no idea. But it just makes it bigger.
That's adorable.
Because, yeah, when you like the people so much and, you know, you just see what people write on in media, and like Swedish journalists are kind of known for being very negative. And it's so easy, like it gets to me a lot when you see the negative stuff that they write about you and the negative comments that people have. But then you hear the national team people who know what you're going through and mm-hmm. have coached you and seen your whole journey. And they're like, yeah, we partied at the office for you. Thank you. You know, that makes it all worth it.
Okay, well, that is the sweetest thing I think I have ever heard, because you sink that last putt and you're like, yes, they get cake because of this. That is so nice. And it's just extra special, you know, to come in and win something and only be the third player to do it and to be able to represent on that. And I'm sure, too, just coming from that momentum, you know, last year was an Olympic year. So I know it was a lot of national pride and centered around that. And coming off of that, still be able to celebrate that in another way, right?
Yeah. I think at the Olympics especially, they talked about, we got questions like, oh, you're not playing for any money this week. What's that going to be like? And I said, that's just going to make it better, because you're playing for your country and there's nothing bigger. I mean, you saw both Scottie Scheffler and Lydia Ko, who won the men's and women's competition. They were crying because it meant so much for them, because it's not that often that we get to just play for our countries. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're really fortunate as well that golf is a high paying sport when you're top, like up there in the world rankings. But I think that taking the money out of it, I think that we would still play golf even if we couldn't become, you know, millionaires off of it, because it's such a great sport, at mm-hmm. least I think. And I think there's a lot of people who agree with me. And, you know, I talked to some Swedish handball players at the Olympics and they're obsessed with golf, and they say, we play handball so that we can play golf on the weekends. You know, people just love this sport, and being at the Olympics and feeling that, you know, spirit, because we're kind of an isolated sport, it feels like a little bit, because we're traveling so much everywhere. It was so cool.
Something that when I love talking about Olympians is that it is not former Olympian. It is always Olympian, and no one can take that away from you. So I'm so happy that you're able to experience that. And for the love of the game, that's kind of what it's all about. And one other thing that I wanted to ask you about was someone who I know loves golf is your caddy, Jeff, who was a former stand-up comedian. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, what better person to have in your corner during stressful situations than a comedian? How did that help you stay loose on the course? You're smiling and laughing already.
He's just such a character. He sometimes, I think that he does little bits. I don't know, because he will go like, what's the deal with like Americans and cheese or whatever? Like, blah, blah, blah. And he's just, did you use this in a stand-up routine, or did you just think of it? Like, I don't know if that's something that he's rehearsed or not, but he was so great because it felt like he had a very much a the show must go on mentality. You know, he acted the same way on the first hole as on the last hole, and he just kept me very loose. I mean, we were still joking around on the 18th green on Sunday, because he just knows that that's what a player needs right then and there. And he has these stories that go on for ages, and it just keeps your brain really engaged. And I mean, his longest story, he was talking about the same story for four holes. And when you think it's, yeah, and that's like an hour of talking. And when you just, I stand there and I listen to him and I think that the story's over, and then it gets better and then it gets better. And you're just like, oh, I never want this to end. Like, this is great.
Great distraction, because I feel like you tap more into the muscle memory and like you're not so focused, hyper focused on every single thing. But then also the other side is that he's still a caddy. Like, it's comedian is like the side job of it, but he's still a caddy. Mm-hmm. So for those of us, like, I think you guys are a pretty new pair. What do you look for in a caddy, and what does a caddy add to your game?
Yeah, I've talked to other caddies about Jeff, and they all say, you know, he's such a goofball and he's so funny, but he has one of the best golf brains in the world. He knows. So one thing you look for is strategy. Just like, will they go out, walk the course, just look at options, where to hit, when the pin is back of the green, front of the green, right, like whatever. And I think that Jeff is really good at saying no, because, you know, I'm an aggressive player. I want to have fun when I play as well, but then we don't want to do something stupid. So sometimes when I'm like, I have my hand on the driver and he goes, no, Maya, no. And that is something you need. You can't just have a yes man being like, oh, that would be cool, hit it. So I think that was a huge thing for me, just having someone to get me back to earth a little bit. And you know, you want to have someone who's a good friend. I mean, it becomes like a marriage after a while. I mean, with my old caddy, we were working together for almost 3 years. Mm-hmm. And just having someone that you're like, I tolerate you every single day. And that's not many people that, you know, that you're not in a relationship with, that you feel like, I want to be hanging out with you every day. And it was very special. Like, after my win at the US Open, I obviously enjoyed doing that with Jeff a lot. And I've talked with Jeff about this, and he asked me, do you miss Had? And I go, yeah, I miss Had. The only reason I cried on that Sunday night was because I didn't get to do it with Had. Because it's like, when you've been working together for so long, you were striving for something, and then you just thought, like, we came to a mutual decision to not work together anymore because it just wasn't working. That's what you want. You want your caddy to be in your corner and be like, I want the best. He said, I want the best for you, and I don't think that I can provide that for you. And as your friend, I want you to move on. And that was like, having someone like that in your corner is that, I think that is the most important part, because I could work with Had for ages because I like him so much. But as like a professional, it's my job. He said, you need to get someone else. And then now I obviously have Jeff, who I like a lot and is a fantastic caddy. And obviously we work really well together.
Wow. I mean, you mentioned it's like a marriage, like it's like a breakup, like you're mourning a relationship and a partnership that you guys have built over so long. And now you are stepping into this new partnership and this whole idea that a caddy is like with you through and through the ups and downs, through the course, through the jokes, through everything. So you kind of have to pick those people wisely. Wow. I'm sure that was a really hard decision that you had to go through. My goodness.
Yeah. I get a little teary-eyed when I think about it. But and then I see him at tournaments and I'm like, he's mine. That's like the one that got away.
That is so sweet. Oh, yeah. My gosh. Okay. Well, I know that is so special. And thank you so much for sharing that. And Maya, I honestly could talk to you forever, but I don't want to take up any more of your time. So I'm just going to ask, you know, this is such a huge career milestone for you, winning the US Open. How do you take that momentum and keep it going? Like, what have you learned from this experience? What have you learned about yourself that you're going to keep it throughout the rest of the tour and other tournaments that you play?
I think the biggest thing I learned was that I need to lose control more often. because I started working on a couple of swing thoughts, and they're very much about losing control. You know, one was like to hover the club above the ground before I start swinging, and that just makes me looser, but it's uncomfortable to do that. And I think just knowing that you have to give up the control to be able to play well, I think that was the biggest thing, and that I also can do it. And I honestly didn't feel that nervous on the Sunday, because I knew that I know exactly what I need to do, and that is just to let my game just shine through, and like all my practice and the preparations that we've done. So I think that's it. And just knowing that I can turn stuff around, and I can be stable anyway, no matter like if the course is really hard or if nerves are supposed to creep in, I can still focus on what I'm supposed to do.
And if you have ever any doubt, you can look over to the huge trophy on the bookshelf in your apartment, which I also love. Thank you so much, Maya Stark, professional women's golfer. Thank you for your time, and congratulations again, and good luck the rest of the year.
Thank you, Jordan.
Thank you again to Maya Stark. Seriously, one of my favorite conversations. I hope you learned as much as I did. We are wishing her luck on the rest of the LPGA Tour. Next, we're going to dive into the business side of women's sports and wrap up the show. You're listening to She's Got Next with Jordan Robinson.
Let's get down to business. Here's what's happening in the business of women's sports.
Welcome back to She's Got Next. Now it's time for Let's Get Down to Business, where we talk about the business side of women's sports. I want to talk about the TV viewership ratings from the 2025 French Open. There were some records in there, and we love talking about breaking records on this show. 1.5 million viewers in the U.S. tuned in to watch Coco Gauff and Aryna Sabalenka in the 2025 French Open Finals. We know how spicy that one got. That was an amazing match. That was a 94% increase over 2024, making it the most watched women's final at Roland Garros since 2016. In France, 3.1 million viewers turned in to watch the women's final. And the semifinal matchup between Coco Gauff and French phenom Louis Boisson averaged 5.4 million viewers in France, with fans captivated by the locals' deep run in the tournament. She was such an underdog. So I get that story. I love that. Record number of viewership. It's kind of hard to understand why none of the women were in those primetime night slot matches, but that is a conversation for a different day. This, to me, these numbers, this viewership is a conversation about access. And the French Open this year was on HBO Max, Discovery Plus, and TNT and True TV on regular cable in the US and UK. Typically, these have been on subscription-based services like the Tennis Channel, and it was also on Eurosport and European territories outside of France. Warner Brothers Discovery agreed to a 10-year, $650 million media deal for the French Open last June. So we're going to keep this format until 2030. To me, it is working. It has been so obvious that if you put women's sports on the mainstream, we will watch. So that's, to me, that's what that shows. So super happy with those millions of views. I was one of them. Love that for women's sports. Real quick, let's talk TV Guide. What women's sports you should tune into this week? I have one for you. You won't want to miss the PWHL draft coming up on Tuesday, June 4th. Could the next women's hockey star be entering the league? We'll have to find out. Top prospects for this draft include forwards Kristina Kaltunakova, Cassie O'Brien, Natalie Milinkova, and defenders Haley Wynn, Nicole Gosling, and Rory Gilday. You can catch the 2025 draft on the league's YouTube page. All right, that's it for me. I hope you guys had fun this episode. Hope you enjoyed it, learned a few things, take some things with you to the water cooler. That's it for me now. I'll see you next time on She's Got Next with Jordan Robinson.